And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by my friend Sondra. Sondra, how are you?
I'm okay, Kenny. Nothing too interesting to report, I suppose. How are you?
I'm good. I managed to get into an online rivalry with Ryback this week. That was nice.
I saw that. That did make me laugh. It's weird, like, of all the people who, like, normally block people, I can still see Ryback's tweets and I can still see JBL's tweets. So apparently I haven't done anything too egregious there. I think the only person I'm blocked by that I know of is Randy Orton. So
that makes sense.
It does.
The thing is, so, you know, this was, like, my kind of, like, way of having a little bit of fun. Like, I deliberately didn't tag him.
Right.
Because I was curious if he vanity searches himself.
Of course he does.
And we got the answer to that question. So, you know, that's fine.
Because I saw the tweet and I saw that you didn't tag him. And I was like, that's still going to come across his radar, I bet. Did anyone, like, snitch tag him?
Not as far as I'm aware. I just think he's someone who searches for himself. But, like,
yeah.
The thing is, like, if you're going to be... There's a lot of hills to die on. But, like, the hill that, like, you're telling... a journalist, the world would be better off with them dead. Like, it's just, you fucked up. Just admit you fucked up.
Yeah, I don't understand the people who are like, Dave Meltzer is a cancer to society. Like, sometimes I don't agree with his opinions, but, like, honestly,
but, like,
who cares?
Like, see, in any other, like, profession, like, say there was, like, sports journalism or, like, movie journalism, or it's like, you know, if you used to read or watch Roger Ebert, the film critic, or you watch Mark Kermode in the UK, it's like, you don't say that people are uneducated marks who watch, you know, their podcasts or listen to them talk about film, because people in film understand that the sort of critical discourse is, like, it's
part of the entertainment form.
Yeah, and, like, it's the thing that, like, him going to the whole, like, because I think I obviously couldn't see he'd responded. I didn't even know he'd seen it. It was only somebody had tweeted me saying, Ryback's blocked you, here's what he said.
Oh, okay.
And it was like, because I didn't even, like, I'd said it and then I moved on. And then he, you know, one of the first things was, you know, you're one of these uneducated marks. And I'm like, I don't mean this in a bad way. I think I'm more educated than Ryback. Like, and I don't mean
yeah.
that to be, I don't mean that to be like a me trying to be superior thing. I don't, because I don't think education really has anything to do with you being intelligent or not. But, like, him saying that, you know, I'm an uneducated mark, it's like, I have a degree and a master's. I'm good, Ryback.
Yeah.
I'm okay. So,
like, I think you're doing fine. And I think that you've watched wrestling long enough and been involved in wrestling long enough and worked in wrestling long enough to, like, you kind of understand what you're talking about at this point.
Well, the thing is, I also know specific stuff that I could say pertaining to him to make him look worse, which I'm not going to do. So, like, it's fine. It's just, like, there's a lot, you know, there's people who I'm just like, oh my God, you know, get them off my timeline, or I can't be bothered with them. But, like, you know, anyway, I also covered this with David J. McCutcheon on A New Over to You on Patreon.
I'm so excited to, is that posted now? I haven't seen it yet.
It's going up in the next hour. So
okay.
It should be up the time
I'm
people
listen
to
this. I'm very excited to listen to you guys together. I have missed David J. McCutcheon's voices. No, he has one voice on the airwaves.
it was a lot of fun. I ended up, like, kind of cutting a promo on Ryback, which I didn't mean to do. Because when you're around David, David just cuts promos. That's all he does when he talks. So
yes.
You get sucked into that way of conversation. But the other thing is, obviously, recently, as people know in the podcast, I have become a shill, which is, you know, the thing is, we always said we would never become shills unless we wanted to, and I can become a shill for alcohol. Like, it's one of the only things I'm willing to be a shill for, right? Because how did we get through COVID, people? Alcohol.
Lots of alcohol.
I actually got my I know I'm about to talk about Beer 52, as you are sure that I am, but like I got
And
beer
just making me jealous that I can't have access to it.
Exactly. But like, so I've tried it. I actually think it's really good. I'm into it. Steve Gunn and I have been tasting them. A lot of flavors. I'm a big flavor guy in the beer world. Like just regular beer, but like flavors, that's where you get.
You enjoy
me,
a shandy. Quite a lot.
But like, you know, you get your pale ales, but you know, if you want to kind of support this and get involved, you can actually get a free case of 8 craft beers from Beer 52. They're sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet, and you get them for free. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/ITR, and all you need to do is pay the £5.95 for the postage. And Beer 52 is not like the Ryback of beers. They're actually the world's most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members. They send a brand new case to every month. Each month's case get different themes in countries that Ryback's not wrestled in, like New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, and places where he has wrestled, like the USA and Europe. I can't believe I just turned that into a Ryback thing. Anyway, as an independent British company, though, Beer 52 are passionate about the UK craft beer scene. Ryback was not passionate about the UK independent scene. But Beer 52 continued to support the UK craft beer scene during all the COVID stuff and all in this difficult time, which is a really cool thing to do. And if dark beer is not your thing, kind of like me, if you're a bit more of a lighter guy when it comes to beer, you can choose the light option. You get a case of light beers with the award-winning beer magazine Ferment, and you get a snack as well. But if you do change your mind, you can pause, cancel, or cancel your account at any time. Just go to www.beer52.com/ITR to get those first 8 beers for just £5.95 to cover the postage. That is www.beer52, that's the number 5 and then 2.com/ITR. I saw on our Facebook community, Stephen Ross was talking about he's been a Beer 52 guy, subscriber, beer receiver for a long time, and he bigged them up a lot. And then Peter Jenkins, one of our listeners, he'd actually got his first crate through this week, so he'd got that on a Wednesday morning, which in Wales I think is pretty much when people start drinking, on a Wednesday morning.
I mean, that stands to reason.
Exactly. So yeah, check out Beer 52 if you want to support us and support Beer 52 at the same time. So yeah, let's move on to the wrestling. Lots of stuff going on. The thing I was going to ask you about, obviously we're going to talk about NXT and AEW, which we will get into, but before we discuss them, I thought we could talk a little bit about Roman Reigns, because obviously you've been watching SmackDown, you've been getting into it.
I have.
And how are you feeling about the Roman Reigns heel turn? I know that you were saying last week that you are on the Roman Reigns train. How are they doing here with the partnership with Heyman and Lesnar, Heyman and Roman, and is it different enough from Heyman and Lesnar to make this feel fresh?
I love it. I absolutely love it. And I do think it's different to Heyman and Lesnar, because Lesnar's just like a beast, right? That's his whole thing, is I am the bigger man with a questionable tattoo who will suplex you a lot. Roman, like, it's interesting because Brock Lesnar always kind of feels like a little bit outside of WWE in a way, right? Like, he's the special attraction that was brought in. So Heyman would always kind of big him up as like, when Lesnar shows up, it's going to be a big problem for you. And with Roman Reigns, he, even though he's been gone for so long, I think he's been always the guy who's there, right? Like, he's always been the guy who's, you know, people didn't want him to be there when he was there. So it feels different enough to me that Roman and Paul Heyman are together. It feels like a different dynamic. I love it. I think that Heyman is great with Roman Reigns. Like I said, his explanation on SmackDown last week I thought was brilliant in terms of why he would get with Roman Reigns, or why that partnership would come about. Angry ass Roman Reigns, who's like, I'm on top of this company, bitches, and I'm just going to wreck you, I am so here for. Like, I really like him as champion. It's weird because you know how much I love Bray Wyatt. Like, I'm wearing my Fiend shirt right now, actually. And Bray Wyatt's always been kind of a, you know, a difficult one for me, because, like, I love him so much. But then he it feels like when he reaches the top of the mountain or when he gets close to having like a really good thing, it just doesn't quite work out. And I don't want Bray Wyatt as champion anymore because I just don't think The Fiend works as champion, or they don't know what to do with him, maybe is the problem. I'm not sure what they could do to fix that. But Roman as champion is just like, I'm the guy that you hate, so now I hate you too. And it actually makes sense. It doesn't feel like turning on the crowd for no reason. I love it. I think it's going really well. I've been enjoying Roman Reigns quite a lot. I am still on the Roman Reigns train, Kenny. How are you feeling about the whole situation?
I'm still on the train as well. Yeah, this, I think it's really good. I think that, you know, it's funny because David actually, I'll say one thing that kind of is a giveaway from over to you. And you know, somebody, I think it was, somebody had asked, you know, is there anything that WWE's done in 2020 that's made you kind of check it out or want to go back? And he said that with a lot of the stuff that they're doing now, you know, the Bayley and Sasha stuff and the Roman heel turn, part of the reason that he just hasn't really been compelled to check it out is it feels a little bit too little too late for a mm-hmm. lot of people who I think wanted Roman Reigns to turn heel a few years ago and wanted the Sasha and Bayley thing a few years ago. So I think that what hopefully is going to happen is that if they keep the kind of the storytelling as kind of tight as it's been so far with the Roman thing, like, I don't necessarily think that he needs to be dropping that belt to anybody anytime soon. Like, and if you don't have someone ready by WrestleMania who feels like they're the person to take it off him, then just keep it on him. Like,
yeah,
I don't necessarily think that we... Because, you know, we're always kind of like, when a heel wins a belt, we're going, who's the person that's going to take it off? We're immediately looking for the end of what it is. And I think that with Roman, he's still going to cut that big heel promo. I like the way that Heyman is quiet now with Roman, mm-hmm. where he's usually, he shouts when he's with Lesnar. So that's a nice kind of, you know, 180 on that. And
well, because I think Roman is better at handling himself on the microphone than Lesnar is, like, just in general. So I think that's kind of one of the different dynamics too. Like, he's no CM Punk. It's not like when Heyman was with Punk, but like, Roman can handle himself, you know?
Yeah,
this is not the days of suffer and succotash anymore.
Thank God. And you know, the Jey Uso thing is, the Jey Uso thing's not box office, and that's why, you know, if you have these pay-per-views that aren't Survivor Series, I mean, I would never say put Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso the way it is right now on SummerSlam, because it's a new thing, right? It's not been built up or anything. But like, when mm-hmm. you've got these B pay-per-views, this is the kind of stuff you should be doing on B pay-per-views, which is doing something where you're giving a guy like Jey Uso, who's kind of sitting in the sidelines, he's waiting on Jimmy to come back from the injury, and you're putting...
Yeah, where is Jimmy? Is he... He's hurt.
He's hurt right now. I can't remember what the injury is. I'll try and find it while we talk. But he is injured. Therefore, now, obviously... you know, he's doing this. But I think the good thing about this week's SmackDown, I thought, was that I was worried going into it in the sense of, like, when I was watching the show at the beginning, it's the whole idea of, you know, Roman's going to team with Jey, is that it was very clear that Roman has kind of changed, and Jey wasn't really acknowledging it at the beginning. And I was kind of like, oh no, I hope he's not going to be one of these idiot baby faces that's, like, completely oblivious,
like,
to the
dumb
fact. Yeah. But then at the end, when they were raising the hands, he got it. And I was like, okay, he was getting there, but he needed the show to get there. So I think that there's a couple of times where I've been, a couple of red flags that I usually have come up, and they've squashed the red flags down. So that's a good thing.
That's always refreshing. And one of the other things that shows that Roman has changed, and that, like, this is kind of, well, I don't even know if it's a change. It feels like a natural progression for him, is him being Mr. Show Up, Wreck Everyone, and Leave. Like, him not coming out to, like, help Jey for a while. Because I'm trying to remember what happened in the main event. I wasn't watching it super closely. But, like, he's been not showing up for matches, right? Like, the same thing with the triple threat with The Fiend and Braun Strowman. Like, he just showed up at the end of it, and then won, and then left. And it just, it reminds me of that Royal Rumble where he was so grievously injured that he walked out of the arena under his own power and took a nap for like half an hour during the Royal Rumble, where he was supposed to be defending his WWE championship, which made him just look like an idiot and be super unlikable and all that. Cause that's the one where Triple H won it. And I kind of love that this is Roman's whole thing now. Like, I will just go away for a while and take a nap, and what are you going to do about it? Like, he's actually sort of made that into his character, and I'm kind of here for it.
Yeah, it's a good long-term kind of thread from what we had before. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, long may it continue. I mean, I was going to ask you as well, because the Bailey Sash thing, obviously, people are already talking about, you know, what do you do with it? Where do you take it? Finn and I were talking about it on PowerSlam. What do you want to see from Sasha and Bailey in terms of how they do the feud? I mean, obviously, you don't want to book it, but, like, do you want them to go straight into Hell in a Cell next month? Do you want them to make it a longer thing? Like, as somebody who is, you know, I don't know if I know anybody who wants a Sasha and Bailey match to be epic more than you.
Yeah, like, so, I really want it to be epic. I really, really do.
Like, roughly, what do you want to see in terms of, like, a timeline? Do you want it to be a long build to, like, a WrestleMania, or do you want them to just go for it now?
I kind of want it to be a longer build, but I also don't trust them enough with a longer build, because I feel like if they do a longer build, then we're just going to, I don't know, get dicked back and forth the way that we have for years with Sasha and Bailey. I think they're on the right track right now. Like, I love this new evil Bailey. I think if you keep Sasha out for a while and maybe have somebody else in a feud with Bailey, because we have Nikki Cross being the number one contender to Bailey right now, which is great. Like, if we're getting more Nikki versus Bailey, sign me up for that, because I love it. I don't know. I think that you could extend it. Like, I think if you had other challengers or have Sasha align with somebody, maybe like she, I don't know. Like, what if Sasha costs Bailey the championship or something? Like, do we need the title? I feel like there are ways to go with it. I don't even know what I want, actually. Like, as I'm talking through it, I don't know, but I am hesitant to trust them with a longer build, but that would be my preference, I guess. Like, make me wait for the epic confrontation. Even if we had to wait until, I don't know, like Survivor Series or something. Like, I don't necessarily want it to be Sasha and Bailey in Hell in a Cell right away, just because Hell in a Cell should be more of a feud ender than, like, the first thing that you do. And I know that Sasha's going to be, you know, angry because Bailey hurt her neck with a chair and stuff, but, like, also have Sasha out for a while to sell that, because, you know, like, Bailey tried to do a murder on her.
She did. I think what I would like to see, and this is me just, I have been fantasy booking this in my head today, so it's just a bit fresh, is I hope that Sasha comes back either at Clash of Champions or just after it, and then Sasha challenges Bailey to a Hell in a Cell match, and Bailey says no, and she says, but I will give you one title shot, that's it, at Hell in a Cell, the event, but not in a Hell in a Cell match.
Okay.
And have them have a really good match, but Bailey wins, and she somehow cheats to win or whatever. And it's like, that's it. Sasha cannot get another title shot. And then Sasha wins the Royal Rumble. And then we get Sasha and Bailey at WrestleMania.
That would be good.
Like, something like that, but I don't know how you, because I was trying to think about how you prolong it, like how you, without having them wrestle like 10 times. So, something like that I would really like to see. But the story's been really good so far, so I'm willing to go with where it takes us. So let's move on to let's talk about NXT first. We got NXT Super Tuesday 2. I guess the next test of whether they want to go on to Tuesday nights or not. The rating again was pretty good this week. I can't remember exactly what it was. Hang on, let me see ratings.
In your gut, do you think that they're going to go to Tuesdays, or do you think that they're going to stay on Wednesdays?
My gut says they're gonna stay on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that they wouldn't want to be seen to, like, not go. Like, they wouldn't.
Because do you think, like, moving to Tuesday would feel too much like admitting defeat to them?
Yeah, 100%. Like, because I mean, they did a this past Wednesday, the September 8th episode, they did 838,000 views. But then the thing is, because AEW the next night did over 1 million. It just feels like they're going to go, we would rather have, I think they would fight with USA to stay on Wednesday because they can keep AEW lower if they stay on the same night. If they change nights, even though I think it would be better for both shows, I think that, I don't know, if they do it, I'll actually be pretty impressed. I'll think it's a fairly sort of like, you know, ballsy, clever thing to do, to just go, do you know what, we tried, it didn't work, let's move to Tuesday.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think, like, I mean, I would prefer they move to Tuesdays. It would be so much easier. And I think it would be better for both shows, right? Like, it would increase viewership for both shows. It would make more people interested in wrestling, potentially. I don't know. The pettiness runs deep.
It does. Well, let's talk about NXT Super Tuesday 2. We opened the show with Finn Balor versus Adam Cole, they had a stormer of a match, 23 minutes long. This shat all over the Iron Man match.
Yeah, it did.
This was so good. And Balor ended up getting the win. Finn Balor got the win to become the new NXT champion. What did you make of the match and the decision for Big Finny Baby to go over?
The match was awesome. I loved it. I thought the wrestling was excellent. I mean, we know that they're both very good at wrestling, and they, it turns out, are very good at wrestling each other, which I appreciated. And Finn Balor winning was, I believe, the correct choice. I wanted Finn Balor to win. I think that there's more of a story to tell with Finn Balor being a champion, because he's, you know, he's a very different Finn Balor to when he was champion before, and in a very good way, because I like this Finn Balor significantly more than I like old Finn Balor. So, yeah, like, I was very pleased that Finn Balor won. I thought the match was killer. So no complaints here. And I was happy that it opened the show. Like, a little bit surprised that it opened the show, but also, like, Rhea versus Mercedes just felt so big and so box office, and it was in a cage and all this stuff. And it was kind of a nice realization for me too. When I saw Finn Balor and Adam Cole were opening, I was like, right, this is going to be a great match. And we don't know, like, timing wise when it's going to end, which is kind of nice, because you can't be checking the clock and being like, oh, it's almost 10 o'clock, like, the match must be over soon. And also it meant that, like, a women's grudge match feud main evented over the NXT men's title.
Yeah, it was a good call, because it kind of made both matches feel bigger. And, like, you know, to me, like, the Adam Cole style of match, like, this was 23 minutes, I think it was, and obviously we got a few breaks. To me, like, I just enjoy his wrestling so much in that kind of time. Mm-hmm. I just think it's so much better. Like, it's, yeah, it just, it works a lot better for me. Balor is more of a kind of fighter than a spot guy, which also helps me in enjoying the match. So, and I think he's the more fresh champion to have. So, big thumbs up all around from I guess, both of us.
Yeah, because, well, Adam Cole's great. Like, don't get me wrong, he is great. But we had Adam Cole as champion for so long, and Adam Cole as a babyface champion right now, because it seems like Adam Cole is a babyface, question mark. Apparently that's a thing now. But Adam Cole is, like, a babyface champion. I feel like it would almost feel like a watered-down version of his championship reign before. Because part of what made his championship reign before work is that he was such a dick, and Undisputed Era were dicks, and they would help him keep the belt and all that stuff. And I just think that him going in a different direction and telling different stories is better for NXT right now. And Finn Balor being a veteran who has returned with a different legacy and something else to prove. I don't know. Like, that's the more interesting story to me. So I'm happy that Finn Balor is champion.
So let's talk about the rest of the stuff on NXT. We also had, what else? We had Velveteen Dream won a squash match. Then we had Kushida come out to return to attack him. Obviously, there's a backstory there. Kushida showed some fire. What do you make of the idea of a Velveteen Dream and Kushida rivalry?
I'd be a lot more into it if not for the Velveteen Dream of it all. Like, I don't appreciate seeing him on TV right now, and it sucks. Like, it sucks a lot. Because, you know, a few months ago, I would have been very into the idea of Velveteen Dream versus Kushida, especially, like, a heel Velveteen Dream versus a fired up babyface Kushida. I think Kushida's great. Like, I was really happy to see Kushida again. But the whole Velveteen Dream allegations and stuff, it just makes me feel queasy that he is prominently presented on TV right now, and I'm not a huge fan of it.
Is there anything they can do to make you feel any better about it? I don't mean that as, like, a sarky thing, but, like, is there anything, you know, do you think in 6 months or 12 months, if we're seeing Velveteen Dream, the character, on TV, doing good work, would that make a difference, or is this just a kind of tainted thing that there's not really anything that they can do to change your mind?
I mean, if they had conducted an actual investigation that wasn't just like, oh, we checked on ourselves and we think we're okay, then that would be one thing. But it, because some of the accusers and people were like, I wasn't even contacted, then that just, that doesn't make me feel like any sort of investigation was thorough in any way. So like, no, not really.
Because like,
I mean,
to me,
in 6 months if he's doing well, and I don't know, I really don't like it.
It almost feels like if you just go to the person who's saying that something happened and hear them out. Because a lot of times, if people at least feel heard, at the very least, then it's better. But
because I mean, like with Sammy Guevara, right? Like Sammy Guevara made a very stupid comment on a podcast years ago. AEW took him off TV, had him go to sensitivity training, like suspended him without pay, all this stuff for like a comment. He didn't even like do anything, you know? And I'm not saying what he did was okay, but I'm just like comparing the situations, right? Like Velveteen Dream, the allegations are not great of him having inappropriate conversations with minors and sending pictures and whatever. So it just seems like for the company to just be like, nah, it's fine, we didn't find anything, doesn't really feel like they're taking it seriously, right? And then other people got fired for similar stuff. So,
you know, it's a few weeks ago, we were kind of figuring out clips for the YouTube channel. And we had this clip, I won't say who was involved, but basically we had this really, really great clip about the future of wrestling involved Velveteen Dream. He was mentioned in the video. And, you know, something when it was put, when we were kind of putting it together, it was like, we just don't know if this is a good idea. Not from like a we're complicit or whatever, but it's just like, we just don't know if you can really, because if somebody says something positive about the Velveteen Dream in the past, if you put it out now, it's almost like you're then making that person sound like they approve of stuff. So I think that even from sort of our side, stuff has changed where you can't really look at it the same way right now.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to sound like I'm saying everyone who's accused of something is automatically guilty and they shouldn't have a chance to be heard. Like, I do think they should. I just think in this case, like, we obviously have to take everything on a case-by-case basis, and it doesn't seem like these allegations have been investigated as thoroughly as they should have been, which I think is a problem. So having him on TV and just ignoring it and saying, it's fine, it'll go away, like, I mean, that's kind of WWE's mantra a lot of the time, right? Is just to say, it's okay. Like, we did this bad thing, but if we just keep, like, ignoring the fact that we did a bad thing, you'll forget about it. And we do. Like, we do forget about it.
A lot of times it's like, it's very difficult, like, especially in 2020, it's difficult to take every single, like, and I don't mean this, this sounds like I'm being sarcastic, I'm not. It's very difficult to take every moral high ground. It's exhausting. Because
it is.
It's like the more that we see, it's like, so most people are fucked, and like most people have done stuff that is really not cool, and it's like, but then if I sort of look past it for this person, and then I don't look past it for this person, am I a bad person? And it's like you enter in all this kind of these mental gymnastics, and it's just exhausting. But like, I think it's stuff that, you know, look, it doesn't really matter if we feel exhausted by that. Like, the truth is better, but it's just be sound, people. Just be good.
Yeah, I mean, that would be ideal, right? Like, I mean, I can't say that I'm, like, blameless in my entire life. I don't think anyone can. So taking moral high ground against everything is, like, you can't do it because we've all fucked up in some way, right? Like,
I mean, I'm lucky
said
that
things that are bad, but
I'm completely blameless, so I'm quite lucky to be in that position. But we are a rare breed of people.
feel like I have audio clips that might disprove that.
I wouldn't open Pandora's box, Sandra.
No, absolutely not. You know, but you know what I'm saying, though, right? Yeah. Like, everybody has stuff that they've said, like, either in context or out of context, that, like, in history would sound bad. Or, like, you know, like, I don't think you can crucify someone for, like, making a mistake or fucking up something in their life, whatever. So I don't want to sound like I'm saying that. I'm saying, like, in this specific case, it just feels real icky that they're like, everything's fine, we promise, and just, like, parading him out there in a prominent spot on their television show. And the fact that, like, this has led to this discussion, right, just means that, like, it's taking me out of the wrestling. It's taking me out of the storytelling. It's not fun to see him on my screen. And I would rather not have to, like, have that difficult conversation all the time, and they just keep making me have it.
Yeah, it's literally, because I remember years ago when the whole Hogan thing happened, it was like, I made this decision where I was like, I need to look at stuff and go, do I feel comfortable, you know, watching matches, saying he's my favorite, but he is my favorite wrestler. And that's, I just don't feel like I could change that in my mind. Now, if worse stuff happened, I probably would have to change it. But again, it's a whole like character versus person. But I think the thing that we're realizing now, especially in 2020, and it is better than it being any other way, is that like if you do stuff, it is going to come out. Now, there's also an element of once an accusation's out there to certain people, like then it's like you're guilty by association to stuff, which is also a problem. But hopefully that will get sorted out. I don't know how we sort that out, but I mean it's a minefield. Anyway, we're supposed to talk
It's
about wrestling now,
difficult.
buddy. Sorry, we tangented, but I assume most people listening to this probably feel the same way. Just like,
Yeah.
what do you say? What do you do? One of the
Like, I
other,
hope Kushida beats him.
I will say this: like, he just needs to be more than Mr. Back to the Future, because, you know, you don't have the music for it. It's just, I get, Kushida's one of my ones where I kind of go, "What's your goal? Is your goal to be in NXT? That's fine. If your goal's further." You know, because he to me strikes me as he would, if he was in the main roster, he would be in the like a Ricochet, Apollo Crews position,
Oh yeah.
where it's like babyface, really good at doing the moves.
Thumbs up, that's about
There
it
we go.
at this point, right?
Yeah, exactly. But one of the other things on NXT this week that I wanted to get your take on was the dinner with Candice LeRae and Tegan Knox. What did you make of, because obviously you were super into these dinner things at the beginning that they did. How did this one work for you?
I think I probably liked it more than most people did. I thought Johnny Gargano being like overly friendly to this woman that he clearly despises was pretty funny. Like I thought the material was cringe, right? Like a lot of it was very cringe and like talking about the pizza delivery and all this stuff. But it was kind of cringe in a way that I enjoyed just because it was over the top, just ridiculous, I guess. Like Candace just being like, no, like I want Tegan to be my friend, and Johnny Gargano's like, I guess fine, and he's, because I feel like we've all had that person, right? Like when your friend is with somebody, or like your partner is friends with someone that you don't like, or something like that, and you just like you have to be extra nice to them because you know that you don't get along and you know that you don't like each other, but you're like, I'm gonna be the good one here, so if stuff goes south, then I can't be the one to blame. And I feel like that's what Johnny Gargano was doing to Tegan Knox here, which was funny. And him like sitting at the table and like laughing extra hard about everything. And Tegan just being like, why are you here? Like, this is supposed to be Candace and me. Like, and I think Johnny even at one point said, like, am I making it weird or something? And it's like, yes, you are. Like, you're not supposed to be part of this. But I enjoyed that. And then, you know, getting salad and spaghetti tossed on each other, which was enjoyable, I guess. Like, I don't think these were great dinner segments, but I liked them fine.
Yeah, I thought they were fine. I think the good thing is that Tegan Knox and Candice LeRae already feels like it's got more going for it than Tegan Knox versus Dakota Kai, which is crazy because Dakota Kai and Tegan Knox started in like the best, hottest way ever. But obviously the main event was what we were here to see on this show: Mercedes Martinez, Rhea Ripley in a steel cage, battering the fucking shit out of each other. And I also want to say, actually, I thought Wade Barrett was great on this show on
He was
commentary.
great.
Really like him.
Absolutely great.
And these two just fought this in like a really good, we're two big bastards going for it. You know, like I loved when, like, was it like when Mercedes was going up and she picked up the kendo stick and she was trying to fight Ripley off and stuff. Like, I really enjoyed it. And then Rhea wins in the end when she does the super riptide through the table. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was just really good. It was a big sort of boost for Rhea Ripley, who's felt kind of a bit aimless since WrestleMania, since she lost the title. Obviously, was away. Mercedes didn't look like a jobber in defeat, so I kind of felt like they took care in how they put this together.
I have watched this match three times.
Three
And
times.
You know that I don't rewatch things very often when I'm, watching the wrestling
Apart from Drag
for,
Race.
apart from Drag Race. But, because there's so much wrestling to watch in a week, especially now that Raw and SmackDown have become compelling, that rewatching things is usually not something that I do, right? So I watched this match live, and then I watched it again. And then I watched it, and then I had to go back and watch the rest of NXT because I was busy for like most of NXT. I had it on mute while I was doing other stuff, and so I had to go back and watch the rest of NXT a couple days ago to actually watch the full show, and I got to the main event and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna just watch this again. Like I have seen this match 3 times. I loved this match. Like Finn Balor and Adam Cole was great, and it was probably like technically better, I don't know, but Rhea Ripley versus Mercedes Martinez was my everything. There were so many, like, they just battered the shit out of each other. The superplex was brutal. Like the finish, the riptide off the ropes through a table was just bonkers. Like, and there was nothing in this match that I was watching it and feeling uncomfortable about safety or like thinking like, oh, you just landed on your head in a really bad way. It was two ladies just going balls to the wall. I thought Robert Stone's involvement was amazing. Like him climbing up at Robert Stone. Like, can we just have a Robert Stone appreciation moment? Like him trying to attack Shotzi Blackheart's tank earlier in the show, and then Shotzi like beating him up, and then Aaliyah getting in Io Shirai's face. Like, that was a really fun world building segment, I thought, because now we have Io Shirai pissed at Aaliyah, who is probably going to be murdered. And I just he is hilarious to me. Like, he is just great comedy fodder. And him just like hanging on the corner of the cage for a good while in the match because he was just beaten. He was just defeated. He's so useless and I love him so much. And I think Mercedes Martinez looked like such a badass here, right? Like coming out and immediately going for tables and looking for weapons and just, I don't know, being resplendent in all her glory, and I just love her so much. And Rhea Ripley has started wearing black lipstick, which just ups the Rhea Ripley game. Like, she looked incredible too. Their gear's fantastic. I do not have enough words to convey my love for this match and how brilliant I thought it was and how great I thought it made both of them look. They both feel like main event superstars. Like, they belonged in this main event, and there wasn't even a title on the line. And it still felt like it belonged in the main event, even though the dudes were fighting over the actual title earlier on. Like, I think it would have been underwhelming for this to be opening the show. And that's just such a compliment to give to a match, right?
Well, also, do you know what this match didn't do, which a lot of, in my mind, the big matches do, is it didn't overstay its welcome.
No.
It was short and sweet, 15
Because it was
minutes.
what, like 15 minutes or
Yeah,
something?
15 minutes. Which is like perfect. That's what it
It was
needed to
great.
be. I will
Like
s
I could have handled another five maybe, but I didn't necessarily need another five. I didn't feel like it was,
I feel
I
like if
don't
it
feel
was
like it
another
was cut short.
I feel like if it was another 5, you might not have watched it 3 times. I feel like you would have
That's
definitely
true.
watched it a second, but I think the 3 times is because it worked as it did. It was the perfect amount of time. Now I will say this, I don't think this is a massive spoiler, but like Mercedes lost here. She's been kicked out of the Robert Stone brand, and she is heavily rumored to be donning some black for some retribution.
Because it was like her voice was in that one clip with Dominik
Yeah.
Dijakovic, right?
And like, good. I mean, I think Retribution have been diabolical so far. Like,
Yes, correct.
we are the intruders who adhere to the brand split. But at the same time, if they've got people like Mercedes in there and people like Dijakovic, who is a good wrestler, and they've got, a couple of good mouthpieces there, then it could be good. But at the same time, I actually like the idea. If I take away my sort of like reservations about Retribution, Mercedes Martinez came into NXT. She's had this feud. She's put over Rhea Ripley. Now she's going to Raw. Great. Great. Do
Yeah,
that.
I mean, I want good things for her on Raw. I want Retribution once they're unmasked to like not be so shitty at their jobs. 'Cause what have they really accomplished, right? Everyone's like, "Oh my gosh, it's Retribution, we're so scared." But they come in and they turn off some lights and they, I don't know, like graffiti a wall. Like, what have they really done?
They're more disruptive than the Riot Squad.
That's true. they're doing a bit more than like throwing plastic cups around. So, I mean, I guess there is that. But it kind of seems like retribution. I want them to settle into a groove, right? Like I want them to have some sort of purpose, and I want them to have some sort of goal. And like they don't seem that disruptive. Turning off the Thunderdome, I think, is kind of cool. Like interrupting all of that. So I don't know. Like, and if people like Dominic Dijakovic and Mercedes Martinez can lead Retribution and make it into a thing and be interesting and important, then I'm here for it. Like, I want good things for her. I think I would have loved to see Mercedes in NXT a little bit more because I think that there are still stories to tell. And I think that Mercedes in the Robert Stone brand has been awesome. Has she been kicked out of the Robert Stone brand? Was that a stipulation that I didn't know about?
No, I'm. There was a video where where she got kicked out after the show.
Oh, was there? Oh, okay. I didn't even know about that. So that's interesting to me, I guess. And it probably does mean that she's, you know, headed for Raw and whatnot. Raw could use her. Like, the women's division on the main roster has been pretty decent, but like, well, I mean, anywhere can use Mercedes Martinez. She's perfect.
Yeah. So let's move on to Dynamite though, because there was loads of stuff on Dynamite to talk about. Felt like they really recognized that they needed to do a lot after All Out, and I thought they did a really good job overall of the show. We had a Matt Hardy promo where he talked about everything that happened. He talked about, he frightened a lot of people, and the outpouring of support's been great. And he said that he's going to go and he's going to make a full recovery. He's going to go home, be with his kids and his wife. Rebby was there. He sort of apologized to her on camera. And he said he's going to go get healthy, and then when he comes back, he's going to win some matches, and he's going to challenge his first AEW championship. His journey isn't over. And a bit of a feel-good promo. How do you feel about the promo, and did it take away any of the sort of ickiness of Saturday?
I mean, I think it did as well as it could, right? Like, I think Saturday was it wasn't handled properly, and you can't go back and change that. But I think him coming out, showing like he's okay, he's gonna take some time away, it's fine. Like, I will miss him on the show, although I don't think that he's been doing tons of. Like, I won't necessarily miss cheerleader Matt Hardy for Private Party. It seemed like he was finally starting to be Matt Hardy again, and now he's just going to go away for a while, which is fine. Like, he can take time with his family, and Rebby was there and, you know, looked supportive and had the baby and all that stuff. So it's I thought he did a good job. It was kind of a feel-good promo, and it was nice to see him get to speak.
Well, it was also good because you by having Rebby there and by having him sort of apologize there on camera and her being there and stuff, it was like, okay, so you assume that they've kind of
Like
apologized to Rebby.
squashed some of
Yeah.
the
They've
stuff.
spoken to them and they've kind of figured it out. So hopefully they learn from it. I thought the promo was good. I think him leaving is probably a good thing. Take some time and come back and have a clear cut idea of where Matt Hardy's going next should be the plan.
Yeah, and like what you want to do with Matt Hardy, because it we've kind of they brought him in and it seemed like we were going to get some like Broken Universe stuff, and then you know, COVID ruined everything, so we didn't end up really getting a lot of Broken Universe. Like the Elite deletion never happened because we just forgot or whatever. So maybe if they can kind of formulate a plan going forward of maybe more of that kind of stuff, or like when he comes back, he could be different again. Because it seems like they didn't really know what to do with Matt Hardy when they couldn't have a crowd to respond to Matt Hardy.
We also had a segment where I never thought that this would be a thing that I would want to see, but like, I don't know about everybody else, right? But whenever I watch Alex Marvez, I don't think he's very good at his job. And
I
like,
always forget that he exists until he's there, and then he's mediocre.
he reminds me of Mike Adamley in a
I
lot of
was thinking
ways.
Todd Grisham.
Oh, I think Todd Grisham was better than this. Like, Todd
Yeah,
Grisham seemed more
probably.
aware of his surroundings. But like I think Alex Marvez is a perfectly nice guy, so it's not like I hate him, but I just oh, why is he here? Anyway, so he tries
He's
to
just
interview
always quite bland, right?
very bland. So he tries to interview the Young Bucks, and he does this thing where he chaps the door and then just keeps looking at the camera, and I'm like, you're on TNT. Like, act. So anyway, the Young Bucks open the door and they just super kick him in the face, and I feel like going, I feel like this is the first time where the Young Bucks have went, I bet Kenny McIntosh wants us to super kick him. And I appreciate that. So thank you, Young Bucks.
I just, it was really kind of a perfect moment, right? Because the Young Bucks are just being dicks. Like, Alex Marvez did nothing to them. He was just, you know, trying to exist and do his job poorly. And
Super Kippa was like,
it's the biggest babyface move by being the biggest dick, right?
He was trying to exist by doing his job poorly.
Well, that's all he was doing, you know.
It's just like the nicest way to throw shade at somebody I've ever heard.
That's my specialty, didn't you know? But yeah, like the Young Bucks super kicking him, I thought was hilarious. And I was just like, wow, you guys really are. And I think it works for people who like the Young Bucks because they can be like, haha, that's a badass thing that they did. That's great. And then it works for people like me who don't like the Young Bucks or find them to be elitist pricks because it's like, wow, you're such a dick. You just super kicked that announcer. That was uncalled for, even though I kind of secretly loved it.
The good thing is that with the Young Bucks that we are finally in a point, especially for you and me, where like we get to dislike them now, and that's what's meant to happen.
Yeah, I'm enjoying disliking them. Like, it's a lot better than when they're just on my screen having tassels and I'm just not into it.
Then we had the big reveal that I don't think we thought was going to be the big reveal that it was, but basically Kip Sabian came out with Penelope Ford. He was going to announce the best man for his wedding. He got rid of Tony Schiavone so he could do it himself. It was the old wrestling. We're going to bring out two people. They're both going to be fake. And then the third one's going to be the real one. It's been done 100 times.
I popped for Puff. I did. I thought it was great to see him on TV.
Now, as someone, and I don't know if I'm in the minority or the majority here, who has no idea who Puff is, can you fill me in?
He's a wrestler. He's a dog sometimes. I don't know. Like, I've seen him on shows, so I know who he is. Basically.
Okay. So Puff was there. He got a little jovial cameo. He's a jovial man. He's
Brian Pillman Jr. It was fun to see him too.
Then Brian Pillman Jr. came out. He was also rejected. So then Kip said that, you know,
and it was like the kind of the cringy comedy of, no, I didn't say you were the best man. I said you were the best, comma, man, because you subscribed to my channel, or like because it was your birthday or whatever. Like, I'm sorry you got the wrong impression and thought that you were the best man and you're not the best man. I love how, like, being the best man in Kip Sabian's wedding is apparently this place of high honor.
Who knew? So eventually the music hits and out comes the former Rusev, Miro. Miro comes out wearing Gucci. He cuts a promo about he spent 10 years living under the glass ceiling with an imaginary brass ring. You can shove it up your ass. And then he... basically said, you know, on Twitch he's going to be the best gamer and he's going to turn up here to devour people week after week. He is Miro and he is All Elite. So what did you make of the debut?
I loved it. I was really happy to see him because I wasn't sure if, like, it didn't seem incredibly unreasonable that he would show up in AEW, but he hadn't really been hinting at it either. Like, no one's really been like, oh, I bet that he's going to be in AEW this week, or I haven't heard that, like, he got signed or anything like that. Maybe I'm just living under a rock. I don't know, but I didn't expect it to be him. I know a lot of people have criticism of him basically talking about WWE and, you know, like mentioning glass ceiling and breast rings and that kind of stuff. But like, for someone like him, it seems pretty relevant to be like, yeah, I was in this place and I was awesome. And they didn't really let me be awesome, right? Because I think he's one of the ones who has like the biggest gripe. Like, him and FTR, I think, are kind of similar in that way, where it's like, if anybody kind of got screwed over by WWE just not getting them or not letting them rise to their potential, like, after that tank it was all downhill, you know. And so I think he has a right to complain about that. I don't want his entire character to be, I was somewhere else and was treated badly. Like, I want him to kick ass and I want him to be great and I want him to be his own person. But he's so incredibly charismatic and amazing and funny and charming and just everything that I have no doubt that he can do well here. Like, as long as they don't pull a Brody Lee and try to make him into a Vince McMahon parody.
Yeah, because I was intrigued by looking around at all the reactions to this, because I, like, marked out so much. I was like, oh my...
I loved it.
We were sitting watching it in bed and, like, couldn't believe that he came out. I think that if you are someone who does not like the sort of, like, the shoot promo reference thing, which is what he did here, then you it might not be for you. I've always liked
but
that
I'm
kind of
someone
stuff.
who doesn't like shoot promo references a lot, and it still worked for me.
But I think it's because you love him.
Well, yes, that's true.
I think if it wasn't him, you would, if somebody who you weren't that into did this, I think you would feel differently about it. But I think because you love him and it's part of his story that it works more. I mean, for me, I've always loved that kind of stuff. I think the difference here is that from what he's doing to what Brody Lee was doing at the beginning, is Brody Lee being a Vince McMahon, you were kind of like, eh? Like, it just didn't really, it was funny the first week, and then it just kind of felt like, oh, please get away from this, and then they did. And I mean, that was actually more interesting than what he continued to do for a while, but now he's better, so it's good.
And now he's great, and he's the champion, so I love it.
But, like, yeah, I think Miro was good here. I'm curious to see what his position is. It's very weird that he's come in as Kip Sabian's best man, but...
Yeah, like, that feels strange, right? Because, like, Kip Sabian and Miro? Like, for why?
But you know what? It's different. I saw people kind of saying, you know, that here's another ex-WWE guy they've got. But the problem is that WWE kind of monopolized everybody in the last, like, 7 or 8 years, and they took them on. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to not get WWE guys. And also, like, Miro is not a spot guy. And AEW has so many spot people. Mm-hmm. They're like, I'll take a big chunk of a man who can do fights. I will take one of those. And he's marketable. He is funny. So I'm into him. I think that they need to very quickly establish him as not just another ex-WWE guy. So that'll be the challenge, I think. But I if you take away the weirdness of him being Kip Sabian's best man, I thought the debut was really fun.
It was fun. And, like, I'm also really excited for Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford's wedding, because I love a wrestling wedding. Like, I love a wrestling wedding. I love the shenanigans. I love Johnny Curtis and Maxine's wedding more than I can possibly explain to you. I love Daniel Bryan and AJ Lee's wedding, even though I don't understand why she couldn't be the general manager and get married, but apparently they were mutually exclusive. Goldust and Oksana's wedding was a good time. I love a wrestling wedding, and I am here for it, and I am stoked, and I hope that there are many shenanigans. Like, Lana and Bobby Lashley's wedding was, like, not my favorite because it didn't really make any sense, but was that the last wrestling wedding we saw and Miro was involved in it?
Yeah, I think it was, actually. It's funny you mentioned that, because when you were talking about weddings there, I immediately thought, didn't Oksana marry someone? So there you go.
Gold dust for citizenship. And then she slapped him because she turned heel.
Sure, as you do.
NXT Redemption, man. Best thing. Or just, yeah, NXT. So good. So good.
Yes, we'll see what happens with the wedding. I got to say, though, something. I really love this show. I did feel very underwhelmed by the Adam Page interview with Tony Schiavone. I just thought he was a bit drunk and a bit, like... I felt like, I don't know, what I love about Adam Page is that he's like a cowboy badass. And
he was a little mopey here.
Yeah, like, mopey Adam Page isn't really who I'm after. And
no.
I kind of hope this is just a wee one-week thing, because, like, I liked him more when he was like, I'm way better than these elite guys.
Mm-hmm. No, that's when Adam Page is at his best. And it seems like, I'm not sure where they're going with this whole, like, drunk Adam Page thing, because it kind of seemed like, for me, like, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega were, like, being dicks about him drinking, and that he was fine, right? Like, but it almost seems like they're wanting to veer into he's an actual alcoholic, and I just don't think that's the way to go, because I think Adam Page is, like, badass babyface who you want to have a drink with is great. Like, I don't want it to veer into tragedy and mopiness. That just brings the mood down. I want cowboy shit.
Hopefully we get some soon. An interesting development on Dynamite was we saw Chris Jericho and Jake Hager against Joey Janela and Sonny Kiss in a no DQ match, which was actually pretty good, pretty eventful. Sonny and Janela got a lot in on the match, and Jericho and Hager got the win, but they then announced that they're going to be going into the tag division, and they want to build up their wins and take the AEW tag team titles. How do you feel about Hager and Jericho going into the tag ranks, and what did you think of the match?
I'm into it. Like, I mean, there are already so many tag teams in AEW, so it does feel crowded, but I like the idea that they're establishing the tag team division as something that is that prestigious, right? Because I think that they kind of have to deprogram a lot of American wrestling fans from thinking that tag team divisions are secondary to world title type divisions. And I think that that's something that you can't do overnight, and they haven't been able to do overnight. But it does make the tag titles feel incredibly prestigious if Chris Jericho wants to go for it. It doesn't feel like moving down to the mid card the way those titles are presented on AEW. So I like that. Jericho and Hager together, I think, work well. Like, I think they work fine together. I think it's a more interesting thing for Jake Hager to do than just being Jake Hager in general. So yeah, like I'm here for it. I feel bad for guys like the Lucha Brothers and like Angelico and Jack Evans and whatnot, because they don't really get seen very often, which I know is kind of part of the story that Eddie Kingston's trying to like fire them up and whatnot. But I don't know, like the tag scene's very, very crowded, but at the same time, I like the idea of them pairing up. And it's something else for Chris Jericho to do if he's going to be kind of away from the actual title scene, because I think his feud with Orange Cassidy was super fun, but like you want to be able to use Chris Jericho in a prominent way. He's Chris Jericho, you know?
That's the goal. I mean, because Omega and Page are now split up, it does open the field a little bit more. And I think that it's a good place for Jericho to be. It's a good place for Hager mm-hmm. to be. It just kind of fits and feels like it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. It works for me.
Yeah. I'm into it. I was worried, but I did love the MJF segment where he sort of fired all the campaign staff. The fact that Nina smiled right to the end is my favorite little detail.
It was so good.
And then like Wardlow and him squared off, and Wardlow backs down when he talks, but he's the one that pays the checks, not Tony Khan. So I actually felt like they kind of redeemed themselves a little bit from his loss on Saturday, because I was intrigued as to where it's going to go. What did you make of MJF, and did they do a good job in redeeming themselves?
Yeah, I think they did. And I think, you know, what we wanted from Saturday was MJF to respond to this loss and react to this loss poorly, right? And he did. Like, he's pissed that he's not the champion. And he should be, really, because Jon Moxley cheated to win. And he called that out. He was like, I should be the champion right now because Jon Moxley used the move that was banned. So I was glad that he reacted to that. I was glad that he's pissed off about it. I think him firing his campaign staff is a good way to show how angry he is and like have that reaction to the loss. Nina smiling to the end also made me laugh like hard, and he's just like, now you smile. I don't know, that character detail just works on so many levels. Also, being a woman who gets told to smile is like really frustrating, so it's like, oh, MJF, you're such a dick. But yeah, like it worked for me, and I'm curious where MJF kind of goes after this, but I think character-wise, they're doing all of the right things still. And he doesn't feel like he's been diminished in that loss at all.
Are you excited? We saw Omega sit down with JR, and he talks about how he's now going to go and be the Kenny Omega that he was before. He took a year out of his career to do the tag thing with Paige. And even if Paige wants to keep it going, he wants to do his own thing. What did you think of Omega's promo?
I thought it was pretty decent. Kenny Omega cutting promos is not always like that compelling, but I think the content of the promo, with him saying that he's going to go and be the Kenny Omega that he was before, and him saying that like he wants to do his own individual thing, it's kind of a shift up. It's a shift in the fabric of AEW, right? Because we've had him kind of squirreled away in the tag division for a while, and for him to go, like, I mean, are we going to get like cleaner Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley eventually? Because that sounds like it could be pretty dope. So yeah, like I would like for Kenny Omega to kind of restore some of his former glory, because I have been a Kenny Omega fan in the past, and I think in AEW he hasn't been booked that well until his tag team win. So yeah, like I guess I'm intrigued for the future of Kenny Omega.
Yeah, Omega and Moxley maybe at Full Gear, because they obviously they announced in this show that they're doing Moxley and Lance Archer on the 1 year anniversary show on October 14th. So,
mm-hmm.
I get, yeah, I mean, maybe that's, I think it would be good for Omega to go back to where, to what he was doing before. I think it's nice to, I mean, but then maybe it's going to be Paige versus Omega. There's a lot of questions.
Yeah, because I mean, the Paige versus Omega feud is simmering. I don't think it's something that we want to rush necessarily, because they broke up, but they didn't like turn on each other right away. But it feels like there's still that tension, and it could happen. I don't know. It feels like there are a lot of options here.
Elsewhere on the show, we also had FTR doing a tag team celebration where Tully cuts a promo. I love Tully Blanchard so much.
She's great.
talks about how great they are. Then, you know, because there's tag teams around the ring, they're insulting SCU, they're insulting Private Party, Jurassic Express. And then Jurassic Express come in, they have a scuffle with FTR, so it appears like we are doing FTR versus Jurassic Express. Here for it. I think it'll be interesting.
Sign me up. Here for it.
Do you know, I was watching it with Steve Gunn, and he made a point, which I thought was... he was like, Luchasaurus is quite hit or miss. Like, sometimes Luchasaurus is quite clunky, and then other times he's really good. So I'm hoping mm-hmm. that in this feud, FTR can bring it the really good, because with Jungle Boy in there, with FTR, this could be a really fun tag title feud.
Oh, yeah, this could be great. Like, and I think Luchasaurus... I mean, he's a dinosaur man. Of course I love him, right? Like, he's great. But I think in the ring, sometimes he can be a little clunky. But, like, usually when he's in there with great people, then it kind of elevates him. And he's a big dinosaur man. So I love him.
The dinosaur thing for me always kind of overtakes any clunkiness. If you're a dinosaur, mm-hmm. I'll give you a pass.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the main event of the show was Dustin Rhodes challenging Brody Lee for the TNT title. Brody Lee ended up retaining, and then post-match, Dark Order had beaten up QT Marshall. Brody was shoving Colt Cabana around. And, you know, this was basically just Brody Lee standing tall and shouting out at the camera that Cody needs to come home. What did you make of the main event?
I really liked the main event. Like, how is Dustin Rhodes this good right now, like currently? At the age of over 50, like he's so good. And it's really nice to see Brody Lee doing something that's actually interesting and good and dominant and wonderful. So I think the Dark Order stuff is starting to fall into place a little bit more. Like, I like that they're being dastardly dicks to the Nightmare family. I don't know. It's working for me a lot more. And it's not me like artificially making it work for me the way I was for a while. Like, it kind of seems like it's falling into place. And Dustin's just awesome, man. And he looks great in blue.
He does look great in blue. This was good. This was the reason that this worked more for me is because, like, the Brody Lee Dark Order stuff was like, there was one narrative this week. Mm-hmm. So I could follow what it was. There wasn't three or four with a fifth for humor if I fancy watching another show. So this was good. This was decent. And I mean, yeah, it was decent. And they're finally playing up the Cabana thing. So, I mean, the character feels a bit like an idiot, but I mean, at least it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was decent. I mean, I guess they're building to a Brody and Cody rematch at some point, which is...
It kind of seems that way because he's still calling out Cody, right? Like, he's still... I mean, he was very dominant over Cody, but apparently he wants to be more dominant and like just keep murdering him. I don't know.
Why not? But yeah, overall, I thought AEW rebounded pretty well on Wednesday. I thought NXT did pretty well on Tuesday. So it was a good week of wrestling for the midweek shows.
Which show did you prefer between Dynamite and NXT this week?
I think AEW just. But I think it's because AEW did a lot more promo and short stuff, which is more my kind of thing. But I think that... I think if somebody preferred NXT, I wouldn't argue the point.
Because I was going to say, like, I preferred NXT, but it also, like, I mean, it gave me my everything. It gave me Mercedes Martinez versus Rhea Ripley, so I'm going to be biased. But I thought the show, like, I mean, other than the Velveteen Dream of it all, but, like, even some of the interstitial stuff with Rizongo and...
Fandango talking in his real voice?
Fandango talking in his real voice, indeed. Like, I liked that stuff. I thought it was fun. And the Adam Cole and Finn Balor match was also awesome, so... I don't know. Like, I liked NXT slightly more, but I thought they both did a good job.
Yeah, I think it was definitely neck and neck if we were being objective people. But, you know, we were both catered a little bit more on one side. But mm-hmm. good shows.
Yeah.
So what are the plugs, Sandra, for all the things that we've got going on?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Follow us on Instagram. I'm at SandraRuth. He's at MCINTOKNNY and at Inside_the Ropes on Instagram as well. You can go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes if you want to support us in the most efficient way, I suppose, and get bonus content. You can listen to Retro ITR on Patreon, where we go through the Attitude Era. We are in September of 2000 and embroiled in a love triangle that I am incredibly invested in right now, which is crazy because it's Triple H and Stephanie and Kurt Angle. And other than Kurt Angle, you wouldn't think I would enjoy that, but oh boy, do I. And youtube.com/insidetheropes is where you can find interview content. Kenny's been doing a lot of interviews via Zoom lately in these COVID times. There's also clips from old live events from back in the day when we could do live events.
I should actually mention, we put up a clip yesterday with Shawn Michaels, and it was a clip of him talking about, because when we were in Glasgow, I was like trying to find some question around Montreal that wasn't the same thing he's always talked about.
Uh-huh.
So I asked about, you know, how did you feel going to TV the next day, knowing that you were lying? Vince has said that you have to lie,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to go into like enemy territory essentially. So, and he answers that question. It's a pretty interesting answer. Involves Undertaker, and that went up less than 24 hours ago, and so far has 105,000 hits.
Wow, that's awesome. That is really great to hear. So.
Yeah, good times.
So yeah, youtube.com/insidetheropes to find that. And if you want to subscribe to the Inside the Ropes magazine that's coming out on September 17, and we're really excited because we're in it, and Kenny's been working really, really hard putting it together for the past few months, insidetheropesmagazine.com is where you can go for that. It will be available digitally, I believe, on the 17th to order. But if you want to order the physical copy or do an annual subscription, then you can do that now.
You can. So that's it for us here. Whose theme song should we play to play us out?
Mercedes Martinez.
As soon as I was asking the question, I was like, why am I even asking this? We know what this is going to be. Okay, here is Mercedes
Martinez. I know she lost, but she was so good.
She was very good, and it may be her final NXT appearance, so let's give her some due while we can. Cool. Okay, here's Mercedes Martinez. Thanks for your support. We will talk to you soon, everybody. Bye.
Bye.